Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 258, recorded July 15th, 2015.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Hello. We're here again. We're still here.
Okay. We have several contributors today, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
You want to go through the list?
Okay, we have Matt in Perth, Western Australia. And we have Rachel in Baltimore, Maryland. And we have Chris in Tomball, Texas. And Robert in Michigan. And a different Robert in Florida.
Unless it's the same Robert and he commutes between those two states, which seems unlikely.
He sent us communication from both places just for fun. But yeah. Yes, probably not.
Actually, they have different last names, so... Different person. Okay.
So, Matt sent us pictures of his nano marine tank.
Yeah, which he mentioned in the last email. I think he said it was 14 U.S. gallons. So you get an idea of what he said about the right size.
The pictures came out really nice.
Yeah, the pictures are really nice, and he's got some really cool corals going on in there. And you can see the clownfish hosting the anemone.
Yeah.
It looks really cool. So check those out.
We'll put those up on Facebook page.
Yeah. And well,
on the show page.
We'll put them up on the show page for sure. Maybe
can
the
you
Facebook
page. Put them up on the Facebook page too.
I can try that. Yeah.
Okay. So Rachel in Baltimore. We got to sing like good morning to her goldfish then.
How come?
Because, you know, good morning Baltimore. You don't remember from Hairspray.
I never saw that movie.
Oh, it's
Sorry.
Cute.
I was going to. I just never did. I don't know why.
Okay.
Not. Okay. Anyway.
Well, you can sing good morning to your goldfish from me, and then I'll show Russ the movie, and then you can sing good morning to your goldfish from Russ.
Okay.
Okay. She says, hello, hello. Thanks for answering my goldfish question. I have another, if you don't mind. Of course, we do not mind. What are your goldfish's favorite foods? I've read they are mainly herbivores and don't do well with lots of protein, but I want to spoil them with some live foods if possible. Right now, they get skinned peas and cucumber, as well as some goldfish flakes and pellets. They also love to eat the sheets of algae I scrape off the sides of the tank, much to my delight. Any other ideas to keep them happy?
Okay, well, I think that sounds like a pretty good diet already. Those are some good things, and
the
they'll probably
be... fresh
veggies
are really good for goldfish.
Yeah, they'll probably be pretty happy with that, but if you want to give them some more, it certainly wouldn't hurt. I think... Well, it's true that goldfish in the wild eat a lot of vegetation, and they should also eat a lot of vegetation in protected environments, such as an aquarium. I think it doesn't hurt them to have, you know, protein boosts. I'm sure in the wild they also are very opportunistic about eating insect larvae and snails and worms and, you know, whatever insects get trapped in the water, crustaceans, baby fish, you know, whatever they can manage. Mm-hmm. So... kind of like, you know, African cichlids eat a lot of algae, but they're also eating the crustaceans that live in the algae. So I don't think you have to worry too much about them getting, you know, a protein hit. It's fine. I think it's a good thing. And probably pretty reflective of what they do in the wild. So in terms of vegetation that you could give them, although cucumber and skin peas are great, I think a couple we could add to the list, zucchini.
Just
green
lettuce
bean
even.
That are split. Yeah, I love to give mine romaine. I don't bother giving them iceberg because there's nothing in that. But I give them romaine lettuce or red leaf lettuce. You know, they'll love that and just nibble on it till it's gone. A little small pieces of orange. I like to give them that too.
You usually peel the membrane off and just give them the pulp, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I don't give them the skin or anything like that or the peel. But what other veggies do we give them? We've experimented with bits of broccoli. They like that. Those are some other items that they
can eat.
Anything
green, really.
Yeah. In terms of live foods that you can give them, a few episodes ago we talked about Finn, a goldfish from California, who likes earthworms. You can give them earthworms if you clean out their gut contents first by putting them in like damp paper towels for a day or two. Daphne are great. I've given ours, let's see, quite a few different types of insects. Ours like bean beetles. Mm-hmm. They like You know, what are
did they ever used to take the Grindelworms, or are those too small, really?
You can give them Grindelworms as long as they're the larger ones. They'll eat those. Yeah, even Hydei fruit flies, they like those. Those are some options you can do. But Daphnia are a real big hit with them. Scuds, another one, or amphipods, they like those a lot. They'll chase after them. So those are some ideas.
Hopefully that helps. Yep. She also says, I attached a picture of their setup right now. I just planted some Anubias nana.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like little ones? Or yep. Was that just a different
It means
kind?
Dwarf. No.
Okay. That they seem uninterested in eating. You may notice a platy in there too. That there's two that I had to take out of my 55 gallons. They wouldn't be eaten by my blood parrotfish. I love my parrot, but he can be a bully.
Mm.
Pardon the low water and the unscraped algae. I'm saving it for their next mealtime.
And it's great that they're eating it.
Yeah, that's nice.
A lot of goldfish keepers really, you know, they try to keep the back of the tank or the sides of the tank or both just a good place to grow algae for that very reason, and it seems to work really well.
Well, they'll eat duckweed, too.
Yeah.
They like the duckweed a lot.
They do. Duckweed is a great one, yeah. So good on you for bringing that up.
Yay me, I get a point.
Because I do think duckweed is a great way to give them plants, so thank you for thinking of that.
Are you pulling up the picture?
I'm trying.
I haven't seen that one yet. It's okay. You can show me later. It's
kind of not working right now. But it is. It does look cool. And Anubias.
We'll put that one up too.
Anubias nana, also known as Anubias bartieri nana, is a good plant for goldfish. If you could see our tank right now, our 37-gallon goldfish tank that is, what is it, like 9 feet away?
Probably.
It's got a good, healthy crop of Anubias growing in there, and the goldfish leave it alone. They do eat the flowers. After the flower flowers, they come and they eat it.
That's true.
But in terms of the leaves, they leave it alone, and it does great. It helps keep the water conditions.
And it looks pretty.
You know, healthy, and it's big in there. I mean,
they like to go in and play in it.
Yeah, it has hiding places for them. It's a plant we've had in there for years, growing, getting bigger and bigger. Right now, I would say that the highest part of the plant, in kind of the middle of the tank, well, almost the middle, a little to the left, really. But it's half as high as the tank or more. Wouldn't you say more?
Yeah, more, a little bit more.
A little bit more than half the tank. Mm-hmm. And it goes from one side to the other in kind of an arc shape, so it looks kind of cool.
Yeah, I like it.
And our goldfish get along well with it, and they're two single-tailed goldfish. A lot of times single-tailed goldfish will eat plants that even, you know, double-tailed goldfish won't eat, and they'll eat most of them. But Anubias is a great one to do, so hopefully they will leave yours alone, continue to leave yours alone. Probably will. And I love that plant. It's one of the easiest aquarium plants you could ever own.
And it looks nice.
It does.
Yep. Okay. So thank you, Rachel, for joining us. And we have Chris in Tomball, Texas next.
And he's a new contributor.
Yep. In fact, he says, I am a first-time contributor from Tomball, Texas, just outside of Houston. This time last year, I had a single 75-gallon tank and performed weekly water changes with 5-gallon buckets. Goodness gracious. Since then, my MTS, or multi-tank syndrome, which I'm sure a very great many of us suffer from the same syndrome, so you have come to the right place, has really gotten the best of me, and I now have several tanks and change over 200 gallons weekly between my various tanks. I use a series of hoses to drain and refill my tank, similar to a python, making the work manageable and somewhat enjoyable as I get a chance to inspect each of my tanks. However, in the summer months, my tap water can get into the mid-80s Fahrenheit, while I keep most of my tanks around 78. I usually try to match the temperature within a degree or two, but this is impossible with my current setup. When I had the single tank, I would sometimes let a few water-filled buckets sit out until they cooled down. I've considered getting water barrels and filling them the night before and letting them come to room temperature in the house, but that would be a last resort since I don't have much room to store them between changes. What is the maximum temperature differential you would use for a water change? Are there any other options you can think of? So, I have a question. When he says his tap water is in the mid-80s, that's the tap water inside the house?
Yeah. Well, he is in Houston. Well, near Houston.
Yeah, but all those pipes run underground. Why is it getting so hot?
Well, depending on where, how far he is from the place they're emerging from the ground, it could just be that, you know, the pipes are taking on heat up above the ground.
Pipes run underneath your house and then up inside your house. It's not like they're up above the ground outside of your house and then
not,
go into
not
your house.
Not outside your house, but I'm thinking maybe he's in a multi, you know, he's in a, could be an apartment building or something like that, where the water is outside of the ground.
Rest of the building.
Yeah. Kind of like.
Those are usually air conditioned.
The building
though.
That I'm in at work is kind of like that. You can't get cold water out of the tap in the summer very easily either, because the water comes up out of the ground, but then it runs through so many things. It runs through the boiler room, and it gets warm. Even in the boiler room's not on, it still gets warm. But in the winter especially, it's warm because it stays so much time out of the ground.
That's so sweet.
So I don't know exactly what his setup is, but, I mean, it is Texas. So, coming out pretty warm, mid-80s. So say it's coming out at 84, 85.
That's like you could go swimming in your tap water.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've never had that issue at home where we've had tap water that warm. We've always had to, you know, add some warm water to it when it comes out of the tap. But I don't know that, depending on the fish you're keeping, assuming none of the fish
sounds
you're
like
keeping
he has
are cool
quite
water
a few
fish.
Different tanks.
Yeah, since all your tanks are around 78, or most of your tanks are around 78. I don't think a water change in the mid-80s is going to be a big deal, especially since a lot of fish are sensitive to water. They're more shocked by cold water coming into the tank than they are by slightly warmer water coming into the tank. And I think, I don't know what the percentage of water change that you're doing in each tank, but if you're doing a 25% water change, you might get a, you know, it might go up to 80 or something, but it's not going to go up much higher than that in your tank.
If the house is warm enough that the pipes are that warm, how do the tanks not get too hot?
Well, what I'm guessing is the water that's coming out of the pipes is warmer than his house because he's got the house air conditioned or something.
It's just so weird. I'm not getting it.
It's kind of an interesting situation,
yeah.
Isn't it? But I would say I wouldn't worry about it too much. The differential between 78 and, say, 84 or 85, that's still, you know, that's 6-7 degrees, so I wouldn't worry about it too much, as long as it's not a huge change. If you were changing 60-80% of the water, that might be a problem, but if with 25%, 30%, 40% water changes, I don't think it's an issue, as long as your fish aren't
acting stressed
with that. I've often found that healthy, well-adjusted fish can stand more of a temperature change than stressed fish. And so when you buy a fish at the store, you have to, you know, take every precaution not to shock it, because they're already stressed.
Right.
But when you have healthy fish at home, it's not that much of an issue. For example, our goldfish here, in this 37-gallon tank in front of us, we do water changes. I do 50 or 60% water changes once a week is the regimen I'm on now. In general, once in a while I miss a week, but in general it's 50 or 60 per week, and I don't really, I check the temperature when I'm setting up the python. Say, okay, is this ballpark? I never use a thermometer. I just feel it. Say, is this close enough? It's not going to shock them, yes or no. And if it isn't, I adjust it. If it's close enough, I just say, go with it. And they've never had an issue. They don't even blink.
Yeah.
They're fine with it, completely happy. That is not true of all double-tailed goldfish. When I would do a 50, 60% water change or higher, sometimes I'd do a 90% water change at first with our one of our double-tailed goldfish. And the single-tailed goldfish in the tank were always happy, but the double-tailed goldfish didn't like it and would freak out. So we stopped doing it.
They're just more sensitive.
Yeah, they're more sensitive, but our double-tailed goldfish don't mind it in the least. And this is also true of our other fish. Our bettas, our barbs, and so on, I do a water change. As long as I check the ballpark figure, yeah, this is not going to bug them, or, you know, they're fine. I've never had an issue with it. On occasion, I remember once, for whatever reason, there was much too much cold water that was going into the 20-gallon where the gold barbs were living at the time, and it shocked them. None of them died, but they all acted very stressed, sank down to the bottom, were showing signs of extreme stress, and I was worried about them for a while. They pulled out of it, but somehow that too much cold water was going in, and that did shock them. I've never other than that kind of thing, I haven't had issues. Not a common thing. So I don't know what other issues, I mean, what other options you have, because chilling something is so much more difficult than warming it. I mean, besides the bucket or the barrel method that you were mentioning. But, yeah.
So they, probably you're fine.
I would say don't worry about it unless you are actually seeing signs of stress in your fish. And thank you for joining us, Chris. Yeah. Hopefully that helps.
Okay, so now we go to Rob in Michigan. Is he new too?
Yes.
Okay. And he just sent us a short note. He says, what a wonderful podcast. Enjoyed it to the fullest. You've just got a regular listener. So
well, thank you, Rob.
That's nice to hear. Thank you very much.
You know, he's our second Rob in Michigan.
Oh, okay. That's why it sounded familiar.
Yeah. Remember the Rob who had a, let's see, it was a clown loach who got stuck in his decoration, and he had to use pliers to rip the decoration apart to get his clown loach out.
That was a while ago.
Yeah, yeah. But he was one of our first contributors to the show ever.
That's true.
So, and he was a Rob in Michigan too, so it's kind of fun.
Okay. Robert in Florida sent us a couple of videos.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of ingenious. He was having issues with, he'd put algae wafers in for his guppies.
And platies.
And platies, yeah. But they would sink down and the snails would get to them first and the fish never got me.
Or the snails would encroach at least and eat enough of them so that the fish weren't getting much.
So he came up with a method to just have them hang suspended in the water column so the fish could get them and the snails couldn't. And so he sent us a video of how to make it and then one of the guppies eating it so we can put those both up. He says, here's how I drill algae wafers to hang on a wire. It keeps it off the bottom so the snails don't get it. So we will put both of those videos up.
And you see him drilling the wafers and then you see the fish reaping the benefits of the drilling.
So he drills it and attaches it to a wire and just hangs it in the tank so it's just in the water column and it doesn't sink.
I think Robert in Florida wins the DIY do-it-yourself award of the week.
Yeah, that works.
That's a cool situation. Cool way to deal with that issue.
So do we have anybody else today?
I think that's everybody else, unless somebody has posted something between.
Do you have anything
since
for
we started
us today?
I do have a thing.
Tell us your thing.
The thing is this: we are getting an axolotl.
Yay!
Our daughter has been interested in getting
an
axolotl
for her birthday.
Some months, actually. How long? Maybe even longer than months. Maybe even a year
while.
Or more.
Yeah.
And we said, okay, that sounds like a great idea, but first we have to move.
We got that part done.
So we got that part done.
Yay!
And then we have to set up the tank, make sure everything's cycled, and we have to make sure that we can maintain the temperature
appropriately.
Because they need to be cool. And it's going to be downstairs in our house, which is
semi-basement.
Quite cool compared to the upstairs. But we need to make sure that we can keep it below 74 Fahrenheit. So we have begun setting up the tank. For her birthday, she got a sponge filter, because sponge filters are cooler than hang-on-the-back filters.
They're cooler?
In the sense that they maintain the water cooler.
Oh, okay.
It's easy. Using a hang-on-the-back filter adds heat to the water.
Because it has a motor?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the heat from the motor. So the a sponge filter doesn't add much heat to it or any heat to the water. So we got one of those. We got a weighted sponge filter. We got an air pump. We got some air tubing, you know, T-valves, that kind of stuff. And I was just going to let her use one of my tanks that I wasn't using, that I'm not using now. So she's going to set that up in her room, and we started setting it up today.
She's excited about that.
First stages. She's really excited about getting an axolotl. She wants a leucistic one, a white one with blue eyes. So happens there's a breeder here not too far away that breeds leucistic axolotls. So we're going to set up the tank, start it cycling, monitor the temperatures downstairs for a while, because we figure if July and August the temperatures can stay below 74, then we don't have to worry about the rest of the year. It'll be fine. But if we find that temperatures are going to be higher than 74, we're going to have to look at some methods for keeping the temperature lower before we get the axolotl. But we can be working on temperature control while we cycle the tank. So then in a month or two, we ought to be ready to pick her up an axolotl. And she's very jazzed about that. So I have never kept axolotls. I've kept some close relatives. I've kept larval tiger salamanders and adult tiger salamanders before. But it will be an interesting experience helping her take care of her axolotl. So looking forward to enjoying axolotl keeperhood.
Yeah.
Co-axolotl keeperhood, I should say.
I don't know, that sounds really complicated.
Yeah, I know. But it should be fun.
Okay, yeah, it will be fun.
I think that's all for this week.
So in the meantime,
may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.